about lawyers. And for the most part, those jokes are putting down lawyers. Some of it may be deserved, some not. There are honest lawyers who will tell you what is wrong with lawyers. Some of the things that people find annoying about lawyers we'll also find about lawyers in the New Testament. But we err if we conclude that all lawyers are bad. I'd be the first one to tell you that there are some wicked preachers for whom the hottest places in hell are reserved. But I would also be the first one to tell you that some of the best people on earth that I know are preachers of the gospel. I think you'd say the same thing about lawyers. Or how about teachers? There are false teachers and there are true teachers. There's bad teachers and there's good teachers. Why do lawyers exist? Well, they devote themselves to knowing the law. And right along with this, some devote themselves to splitting hairs so that they might be able to excuse the evil behavior of some people and exempt others from the law. So what does the New Testament say about lawyers? Well, first of all, we'll learn that some lawyers rejected the will of God. Starting there at Luke 7 in verse 17, where Lake just read from, Luke says that John, if I get those mixed up, you know who I'm talking about, I'm sure. Luke says that John the Baptist sent messengers to Jesus to see whether he was truly the Messiah or not. And then Jesus gave a powerful description of John. After that description, in verses 29 and 30, Luke then adds this. And when all the people heard him, even the tax collectors justified God, having been baptized with the baptism of John. But the Pharisees and lawyers rejected the counsel of God for themselves, not having been baptized by him. Now look at what these lawyers, who are often also called counselors, did. They rejected the counsel of God. It's interesting that Luke chose that word. Here were men who gave counsel, again sometimes being called counselors, but they rejected the counsel of God, the ultimate counselor, taking their counsel over him. Undoubtedly, they thought that John's counsel was just his own and not from God. But in the Bible, the word counsel carries its original meaning of advice or direction, rather than talk therapy, as we tend to use it today. Now, these lawyers found some way to avoid being baptized. And of course, you probably know these lawyers have some colleagues today who likewise find reasons either for not being baptized or for not doing something else. And sometimes you can listen to their arguments and you think they do sound just like a lawyer. John's teachings and commands were simple enough that if you wanted to do the will of God, if you wanted to understand it, you could. There was nothing complicated or burdensome about it. Lawyers like to test. We find that in Luke chapter 10. In Luke chapter 10, in the context of the parable of the Good Samaritan, we find here a lawyer who was actually outwitted by the Lord. And I wonder what he thought about that later. They were used to outwitting other people, but here it happens to him this time. You remember in this case that a lawyer had stood up and wanted to test Jesus. Give him a question. Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life? Now, I'm sure that he had a whole set of argumentations in place depending upon what answer the Lord gave. But the Lord threw it right back to him. Well, what is written in the law? How is your reading of it? How do you read the Bible? So he came back and said there in verses 27 and 28 that you should love God with the entirety of your being and love your neighbor as yourself. So Jesus simply came back to him and said, well, you have answered rightly. Do this and you will live. And that should have ended the discussion. But this man is looking for a loophole. Some reason that would exempt him from doing what Jesus said. And so he wanted to know, well, who is my neighbor? Let's get down to definitions here, Lord. I mean, that's what lawyers are known for, right? Is defining things endlessly. Let's talk about who is a neighbor. Let's define it, Lord. Well, the Lord then just simply gave him what we call the parable of the Good Samaritan. Here's a man who had been beaten and robbed and left on the side of the road for half dead, and he's naked. And a priest comes by and sees the man there and goes by on the other side of the road and avoids him and goes on his way. And then a Levite, same thing, sees the man there, avoids him, goes by on the other side of the road and goes on his way. And then a man from the hated town of Samaria, meaning that he was a Samaritan, half Jew and half other things. He saw the man and stopped, tended to his wounds, finally took the man, put him up on his donkey, went on to the next place where there was an inn, left the man there because evidently he had some business he had to do, and left some money with the innkeeper and said, you know, take care of him. And whatever more it costs me, when I get back, I'll pay it all back to you. And then in verse 36, Jesus said this so powerfully. So which of these three do you think was neighbor to him who fell among the thieves? And the lawyer, not able to say, the Samaritan, just simply said, he who showed mercy on him. And then Jesus said, go and do likewise. So interesting to see the way the lawyer operated here. The lawyer sought to test Jesus by setting him up with a question in which he thought he could trip up Jesus. But then Jesus came back asking what is written in the law. And interestingly, Jesus used the language of the lawyer. He said, what is written in the law? He didn't say what is written in the scriptures or some other word. But what is written in the law? So Jesus wanted to know, how do you read this? And of course, that's what lawyers do. They read the law. And Jesus knew that. So this man should have been a good reader, and he should have had a good understanding of what the law was all about. But many of them, like this one, are looking for loopholes. Jesus made the lawyer answer with the law rather than asking for an interpretation or an argument. He didn't want his opinion. Just tell me what the law says. Since you read it, since you're a lawyer, how do you read it? But what is a loophole? A loophole is something that exempts a person from doing what the law says. And is not a loophole a reason as to why the law doesn't apply to an individual? Show me a reason why this doesn't apply to me, because I don't want to do what it says. And the loophole that this man was looking for was to discover a way that he did not have to love every person. There were some people with whom he had no problem loving, undoubtedly. But there were some people he didn't want to love. And the law was pretty clear. It didn't seem to make any exceptions. Love your neighbor as yourself. And your neighbor is anyone who's in need. And he was trying to get out of that. Because in his mind, the neighbor, the word neighbor, had not been clearly defined. And so Jesus defined it for him, but in a way in which he was not expecting. And this is also the work of lawyers, defining terms so that we can understand them. I think it's interesting how they will sometimes work. They'll create a document that's intended for us, but we can't read it. So what we have to do is hire them, at huge fees, of course, to be able to tell us what it says. I mean, doesn't this sound like a lawyer talking? Like this. Now comes the above-named John Doe, plaintiff herein, by and through Smith and Jones, his attorneys of record, and shows unto this honorable court as follows. Well, there could have been a lot more simple way of saying that. Or how about this version to begin Jack and the Beanstalk? Once on, or about a time, there was a miner named John, or Jack, as he will hereinafter be designated, other name or names to your relator unknown. You know, that never would have become a famous story if it had come out that way. One man said, Moses was a great lawgiver, but the way he was satisfied to keep the Ten Commandments short and to the point shows he was no regular lawyer. How true that is. So anyways, Jesus came back with the famous parable of the Good Samaritan, showing with force how the lawyer had to answer his own question. He threw the questions at Jesus, but then Jesus made him answer the question himself. Another lawyer tried the same tactic in Matthew chapter 22. In verses 34 through 36, the Bible says this. But when the Pharisees heard they had silenced the Sadducees, they gathered together. Then one of them, a lawyer, asked him a question, testing him and saying, Teacher, what is the great commandment in the law? And again, you know that he was set up for any kind of answer that Jesus gave. And he would come back with questions, and he would try to embarrass Jesus or shame him, especially before his teachers. But of course, Jesus didn't fall into that trap. Woe to the lawyers is something that Jesus said on one occasion. In Luke chapter 11, Jesus gave a scathing denunciation of lawyers. In verse 45, it says this. Then one of the lawyers answered and said to him, Teacher, by saying these things, you reproach us also. Now, why did that lawyer say that? Well, if you go back up in the verses, clear up to verse 37, you'll notice that Jesus was in the home of a Pharisee. And the Pharisee had some problems with something that Jesus didn't do. And Jesus revealed that this Pharisee had things all twisted up in the wrong way. Starting at verse 37, the record says this. And as he spoke, a certain Pharisee asked him to dine with him. So he went in and sat down to eat. When the Pharisee saw it, he marveled that he had not first washed before dinner. Then the Lord said to him, Now you Pharisees make the outside of the cup and dish clean, but your inward part is full of greed and wickedness. Foolish ones! Did not he who made the outside make the inside also? But rather give alms of such things as you have, then indeed all things are clean to you. But woe to you Pharisees, for you tithe mint and rue and all manner of herbs, and pass by justice and the love of God. These you ought to have done without leaving the others undone. Woe to you Pharisees, for you love the best seats in the synagogues and greetings in the marketplaces. Woe to you scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For you are like graves which are not seen, and the men who walk over them are not aware of them. So as he says these things, there's a lawyer listening to this, and then just in a burst of honesty, not realizing what he's saying, he says, Lord, what you're picturing of them is pictured of the lawyers also. That sounds like me and my colleagues that you're talking about. Normally, someone would not just come out and admit that they fit a description of wickedness like that. So what did the lawyer see? Well, going back through that text again, verses 39 and 40. The lawyers, like the Pharisees, emphasized the outward nature to the exclusion of the inward. Verse 41, they were not generous. Again, there's of course exceptions to this. There are lawyers who are very generous, and they will do things for free and so on. Verse 42, they emphasized little things, but ignored the larger picture. Verse 43, they liked to receive honor. And then verse 44, they looked beautiful on the outside, but no one knew that on the inside they were disgusting. And so, with the lawyer's confession, Jesus then took the opportunity to pronounce woes upon the lawyers. Starting at verse 46. Woe to you also, lawyers, for you load men with burdens hard to bear, and you yourselves do not touch the burdens with one of your fingers. Woe to you, for you build the tombs of the prophets, and your fathers killed them. In fact, you bear witness that you approve the deeds of your fathers, for they indeed killed them, and you build their tombs. Therefore, the wisdom of God also said, I will send them prophets and apostles, and some of them they will kill and persecute, that the blood of all the prophets which was shed from the foundation of the world may be required of this generation. From the blood of Abel to the blood of Zechariah, who perished between the altar and the temple. Yes, I say to you, it shall be required of this generation. Woe to you, lawyers, for you have taken away the key of knowledge. You did not enter in yourselves, and those who were entering in you hindered. And as he said these things to them, the scribes and the Pharisees began to assail him vehemently and to cross-examine him about many things, lying in wait for him, and seeking to catch him in something he might say, that they might accuse him. But look what Jesus said about these lawyers, going back to verse 46. Lawyers load men with burdens, but do not tackle the burdens themselves. They would tell you what you need to do and how you're doing it wrong, but they wouldn't even so much as with a finger help push the load. Your car's broke down, and you're not pushing it right. And they'll tell you that you're not pushing it right. And they'll tell you how you ought to be doing it. But will they get out and even put a finger on the car to push it? No. They're not there to help. They're there to tell you how to do it and how you're doing it wrong. Do you remember during the 1990s, Congress actually passed a law. And Congress, incidentally, is made up mostly of lawyers. They passed a law that said, from now on, all the laws we make for the rest of America apply to us too. And I remember at the time, you're kidding, I didn't know all these laws they were making for all these years didn't apply to them. They were always exempt from them somehow. I was glad to see that finally they were saying, okay, we'll tell you how to do it, Americans, but we're going to get in there and do it too. But that had not been typical in the past. In verses 47 through 51, lawyers persecute the righteous but justify the wicked. And of course, that's one of the things that we often hear in the news. And again, not all lawyers are guilty of this, but at least they were in New Testament times. But that's the thing we often hear, is how it is that someone who's so obviously wicked can get away with something. Verse 52, lawyers take away the key of knowledge and reserve it for themselves, of course. Verses 53 and 54, look at lawyers do when they go on the attack. They assailed Jesus vehemently. They cross-examined Him about many things. And they preyed upon His words like a predatory animal. Have you ever seen a cat go after a bird? It's fascinating. I mean, a cat can get pretty close to those birds because sometimes they catch them and they'll hunker down real low. And then have you ever seen them do that thing with their jaw where it kind of opens and it shakes? And I don't know what they're doing when they do that. And their tail is twitching behind them. And I always thought, why are you twitching your tail? They're going to see the tail. But then I thought, okay, look at it from the perspective of the bird who's down low. The cat's hiding his tail with his body, so he's not whipping it all over the place like he normally would, but just a little. They know what they're doing. They sneak up on it, waiting for that one moment of weakness, and then bam, they get him. And that's what these lawyers were trying to do with Jesus. They're sneaking up on him, several of them at one time. They're twitching their tails, their jaws are chattering. But they could never catch him until he was ready. to be caught. Do lawyers know what is lawful? Well, at first we would say, well, of course they do. They read the law. And of course, in the case of nations, they make the laws in most cases. But is it possible to go so far into something that you forget the larger picture? Do we not have a proverb in America that says, you cannot see the forest for the trees? And the lawyer can do that too. He can get so far into it that he's missing the picture. When my children were younger, we subscribed them to a magazine called Your Big Backyard. What a great magazine that was. I don't know if it's still published or not. But in the back, they always had these close-up pictures of common things. And the picture, you know, maybe it would be a, you know, one of those microscopes that can get in really close and you just can't tell what it is and you're supposed to guess. And of course, there'd be a key someplace else in the magazine that would tell you what it is. And I think sometimes that's what happens with lawyers, or we can get into that same thing. We can get so far into something, we forget what it is that we're examining. We have to stand back and say, oh, so that's what that is. Now I see how the details fit in. Let's not fall into that trap of a lawyer that we get so deep into it, we forget what we're looking at. In Luke chapter 14, the Bible demonstrates here that lawyers did not always know what was lawful. And Jesus put them on the spot publicly. Starting at verse 1, the Bible says this. Now it happened, as he went into the house of one of the rulers of the Pharisees to eat bread on the Sabbath, that they watched him closely. And behold, there was a certain man before him who had dropsy. And Jesus, answering, spoke to the lawyers and Pharisees, saying, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath? Sounds like an easy enough question. What would the law say about this? But they kept silent. And he took him and healed him and let him go. Then he answered them, saying, which of you, having a donkey or an ox that has fallen into a pit, will not immediately pull him out on the Sabbath day? And they could not answer him regarding these things. And he was right, of course. If their animal stumbled and fell into a hole and it was in danger of breaking its leg and thus maybe have to be destroyed, they would prevent that. They'd rescue that animal. But they couldn't answer the question of whether the law allowed them to rescue a human on the Sabbath day. They were so far at looking at the details of the law and defining things and picking at Jesus and his disciples that they couldn't answer a simple question about the intent of the law. Jesus showed that the intent of the law was to promote love of God and love of man. They missed that. They missed loving God. They missed loving their fellow man. But oh, they knew how many times the word Lord appeared in the Old Testament. They knew how many commandments there were, and they knew all these other things. But they missed what all that was about. Is there a place in the church for lawyers? I know most of what I've been saying and looking at even from the Scriptures has been negative, but it's not all negative. You know, the Bible even shows us in Titus chapter 3 and verse 3 that there was a member of the church who was a lawyer, and he didn't have to give up his occupation to become a Christian. Because it can be a very honorable thing. There Paul told Titus, send Zenas, the lawyer. Had you ever seen that before? I hadn't even heard this guy's name until I just happened to notice that. I mean, I've read through Titus I don't know how many times in my life, and for some reason, I've just gone over that passage really fast. Paul wanted a lawyer with him, as well as Apollos. Why did Paul want this lawyer with him? Was it because he was a lawyer or just because he was a dedicated Christian who could help him? I don't know. But Paul, as a Pharisee, of course, had associated with lawyers. Excuse me. And so he didn't say, I don't want anything to do with these people. I have a use for this man. The church has a use for good, honest men and women who are lawyers in the church and who will use themselves as well as their occupation for the good of the cause of Christ. I'd like to conclude tonight by exhorting us to avoid these five dangers about lawyers that we've looked at tonight. Number one, rejecting God's counsel. Let us make sure we don't reject God's counsel. Maybe there's something in there that we don't like. Or sometimes, you know what happens? There may be some person we don't like who teaches something that's truth, but because he's teaching it, we don't want to accept it. But if we're not careful, we'll end up rejecting God's counsel because of it. Number two, testing only to catch someone. Yes, it's true. We need to test things and we need to test people. The Bible tells us to do that. But why are we doing it? Is it just so I can catch him and pounce on him? Let us avoid that motive. Number three, emphasizing the material over the spiritual. These lawyers were so caught up in the material things, things they could see with their eyes, feel with their hands, and so on, and forgot about the Spirit. Brethren, there is the Spirit, and the Spirit is greater than the material. Number four, being overly concerned about small things and forsaking the larger picture. You know, we like to get into the Word and examine it carefully, but don't forget from time to time, just stand back and say, what is this all about? How do these details that I'm looking at fit into the larger picture? Because if I forget to do that, I'll fall into the dangerous trap of these lawyers upon whom Jesus pronounced a woe. And finally, number five is missing that larger picture that I've already emphasized. Make sure that we do not miss the larger picture, or we'll miss the largest picture of all, and that's heaven itself. That's how serious these matters can be. Brother or sister, is there something we can do to help you tonight? Can we pray for you or encourage you to be a better Christian? Do you need the invitation? If so, come forward now as we stand and sing.